Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, January 5th, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Cherry.
Yes, Avi.
I'm going to read a few terms for you here.
Okay, all right.
Vilpa.
Uh-huh.
Japanese walking.
Okay.
Vibration plates.
Uh-huh.
Does this mean anything to you?
A little bit.
A little bit? You've heard of this stuff?
Only because I was preparing for today.
Exactly.
I had never heard of it before yesterday.
Yeah, a lot of workout trends we've never heard of. We're going to find out more today. And generally, the show is going to be about what's going on in the world of workouts.
Mm-hmm.
It's always changing.
Yeah, constantly.
Trends are always shifting. And those trends tell us something about ourselves,
mm-hmm.
how our broader culture is changing. We're also going to get some tips on how to integrate exercise just into your daily life, because we're all busy.
Yeah. We are. Very busy.
Yeah.
We're very busy. And the thing is, you know,
I said you were busy. You kind of had a little dead look in your eyes. Like, oh, boy.
Because,
yeah,
we talked about, the whole idea of resolutions. And I've, I was on a good trend
after
a couple of years. I backslid for about 10 days.
All right. Well, it's February. It's time to
get pumped back up.
Front slide, I guess. We backslid. Now we're going to front slide. We're going to ask you the following question today. Tell us about your workout journey. What's worked? What's faltered? 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook. Drop a comment in the chat. Maybe there's a workout trend you love. You want to recommend one. 888-477-9499.
Yeah. I want to hear people's go-tos.
We need your help.
We need your help. So 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. And this, because it's Thursday, it's DJ of the day. And I think this is like the perfect topic.
Yes.
For a song.
Absolutely. So every Thursday we end the show with a song picked by one of you, mm-hmm. and we shout out the winner. And you email your suggestions for a song related to the show's topic to executive producer Kevin. He picks the winner. The email address is studio2@whyy.org. Me personally, I would not pick Physical.
Let's Get Physical. Don't do that one.
By Olivia Newton-John.
That's a good one.
I like, but it's just too obvious. Give me a deeper cut.
Yeah. And by the way, you have to get those emails in by 12:30. Again, studio2@whyy.org. Now our trio of news stories.
Hit me.
So primary day is just 4 months away, and the who's funding the candidates for the very crowded third district congressional race is starting to become clearer.
Mm.
The Philadelphia Inquirer pulled back the curtain on the candidates who raised over $100,000, and it looks like State Senator Sharif Street is the front runner, having raised about $700,000, followed by David Oxman, who has about $500,000, Dr. Eli Stanford, $470,000, State Rep Chris Rabb, about $385,000, State Rep Morgan Cephas coming in under $250,000, and Pablo Makani Saeed, a former climate advisor to the Biden administration, he just hit the threshold at $119,000. And by the way, what's very interesting is the mass majority of Street's money comes from individual donors, over 200. Mm. So does Rabb and Cephas. And the two folks who have the biggest amount of self-funding,
mm-hmm.
David Oxman and Dr. Ayla Stanford. Ayla Stanford gave herself $250,000.
Okay.
To fill the coffers. And what's missing from all of this is PAC money. PACs have only given a little over $100,000 to this entire race, which is very unusual.
They also looked, by the way, the Inquirer, at the fundraising landscape for that Brian Fitzpatrick race, mm-hmm. up in Bucks County. Fitzpatrick, the incumbent, thought to be maybe vulnerable if this was a blue wave election, but he has vastly outspent his likely Democratic opponent, Bob Harvey. So in that case, Fitzpatrick way out in the lead, and Republicans mm-hmm. pouring lots of money into this. Of course, Democrats probably don't know where to put their money yet because there's so many candidates in this other field.
Yeah, it's about a dozen or so.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing about money, too, with politics. It's like sometimes the money tells you who's ahead, but sometimes it's not so much that you need the money to win, but that the money goes to the people that the insiders think is going to win mm-hmm. already, because mm-hmm. they want to be, in with the person who's going to have power.
And the money gives you visibility, right? So, as we get closer to primary day, you'll start seeing the ads and all the things. And you need money to be able to do that. So you have name recognition and all that. And so we'll see what happens with this third district. Also, I mean, there's some other race, like you said, the Brian Fitzpatrick race. Mm-hmm. So, he's doing pretty good there.
Money talks, but voters rule.
Yes, absolutely.
Don't forget that. Story number two. In 2023, the U.S. Supreme Court effectively banned colleges and universities from considering race in the admissions process. And the question that we all asked after that is, how is this going to change the demographic makeup of schools? And a nonprofit called Class Action published some data this week. And overall, they found that enrollment of underrepresented minority groups, such as African-Americans and Latinos, fell at many elite schools and rose at state universities. They called this a cascade effect. Mm-hmm. Locally, however, the picture is a little bit more complicated, according to an article in Philly Voice. At Penn, which is our region's highest-ranked school, the percentage of Black and Hispanic students in the freshman class actually held steady. Mm-hmm. What really changed is that there's fewer white freshmen at Penn and far more Asian-identifying freshmen at the University of Pennsylvania. At Temple and LaSalle, however, we did see some evidence of this so-called cascade effect. Enrollment of first-year Black and Hispanic students was up significantly at those two schools. Meanwhile, the enrollment of first-year white students dropped significantly at Temple and LaSalle.
Yeah, it was also interesting is that the number of white students also decreased at Drexel, Villanova, and St. Joe's as well, because they looked at all the six biggest schools in our region. And by the way, when the numbers are combined from Philly's six big schools, white students went from making up about 54% of the student population in 2018 down to 37% in 2024.
Wow.
So when you look at it collectively, that's pretty significant.
Yeah. Some of that shift was happening pre-Supreme Court decision, but I guess that this decision has accelerated a trend that was already happening.
And it just wonder what other factors are at play besides the affirmative action ruling. Could it be the cost? Could it be, you know, this trend where a lot of young people just don't decide, you know what, I don't want to go to college.
Right. Maybe it could be that there's, you know, the pool of students is just more diverse.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of it too. Right? So it's not all just related to the U.S. Supreme Court, mm-hmm. but it probably is part of the explanation for these broader enrollment changes at our local schools.
Yeah. So such an interesting report there. Our third story. A Philadelphia bar said it had to raise the age of entry to 25 years old because so many underage college kids are coming in with very convincing looking fake IDs. Great story by Billy Penn's Julia Biswanger. And the owner of the famous dive bar Dirty Frank's at 13th and Pine, they apparently said the straw that broke the camel's back was when a kid tried to get in with, get this, a fake Ben Franklin ID.
What?
You heard me. Fake Ben Franklin ID. If you look close, there is a picture of Ben Franklin on the actual ID. Their birth date, 2001. He's an organ donor. And his address just happens to be the Liberty Bell.
Yeah, that's where Ben Franklin
lives. That's where he lives. So how did this pass the sniff test? Well, it didn't. But many of these fake IDs do because they are so good because technology allows them to pass the little ID scanner. And many times the bouncers don't actually look at the ID. They just scan it real quick.
Right. So this Ben Franklin fake ID did scan in as a real ID.
What?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It is insane.
But obviously, if you just took the time to look at it, you would realize it's a portrait of Ben Franklin. You know what? I have so many questions, just so many questions about the Ben Franklin fake ID. But more than my questions, I just find it to be disrespectful. So Dirty Franks is a bar and it has pictures of famous Franks on the outside of the bar, including Ben Franklin.
Yeah.
So was the
and
person
also Aretha.
And Aretha Franklin,
and
yes.
Frank.
And Frank Sinatra. Sinatra. So was the person with the ID like trolling the bar to be like, I could take a famous portrait from outside of your own bar and still get access to your bar?
I just think kids just, you know, maybe it was a troll.
Because it's an unnecessary risk, right?
Like,
if you're actually trying to get into
that
the bar.
That was a good picture of Ben, though. That was, he looked very young
but it,
and fresh.
But I don't understand. Yeah. It feels like maybe the kids did need to be put in their place a little bit, because if you're putting the Ben Franklin ID, that means you really have no respect for the bouncer.
No, you don't have it. And they've been doing all sorts of things, according to the owner at this restaurant. They've been coming in with their own bottles. So they haven't even been spending the money, you know, at the bar. They're vaping when vaping is against the rules.
Come on.
So you know what? Dirty Franks, they've been looking for a reason to get rid of some of these teenagers who've been coming in here with these fake IDs. And then, you know what? Y'all tried it with Ben Franklin. Now none of y'all can come in.
Aretha Franklin, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. You need to show some, young people.
You gotta be 25. That's what you get.
You need to show some.
That's what you get.
I don't get it, man. Is someone going around making fake IDs with other iconic Philadelphia? Is there a William Penn fake ID out
there? They need one.
A Will Smith?
Oh, goodness.
We'll be right back.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Oh, and welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. With the Olympics and the Super Bowl on the horizon, muscles are on the mind. And while not everyone is a world-class athlete, many of us are trying to maintain some degree of a fitness regimen. I know I am, right? But it might be overwhelming to sift through the constant stream of workout trends promising perfection. So today we're not talking about how to optimize. We're asking how to make fitness enjoyable and sustainable.
And with us today in the studio is Thomas Jefferson University exercise science expert, Katie Hunzinger. Welcome, Katie.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We also have with us Danielle Friedman, contributor to the New York Times Well Desk and author of Let's Get Physical, How Women Discovered Exercise and Reshaped the World. Danielle, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much.
Yes, and for you, our listeners at home, on the road, or elsewhere, we invite you to participate in the conversation. Our question for you is, tell us about your workout journey. What has worked or what has faltered? And if you have something that is really stuck, we'd love to hear that. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you can put your comments in the chat.
I'd love to start with you, Danielle, and ask a little bit about workout history, exercise history, because I know you've written a lot about this. How would you describe the kind of historical era we're in now when it comes to workout trends and fitness trends?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's always, you know, it's tricky to kind of suss it out while we're living through it. But I think if I had to pick one main trend, I think we're in the era of strength. Mm-hmm. Weightlifting, strength training has seen a major surge of interest and popularity over the past few years. And people who never sort of saw themselves as weightlifters have started taking it up. I guess I would also expand on that by saying that there has been a lot of conversation in recent years about movement and weightlifting, strength training for healthy aging, and the word on everyone's minds, longevity and health span. And so I think this idea that exercise is for more than just aesthetics, you know, weight loss in some cases, but is really about quality of life as we age, that defines the era we're in now.
Yeah. So it's like a strength training era, but not necessarily tied to that vision of strength that we would associate with an Arnold Schwarzenegger. And that's kind of when weightlifting really became more mainstream. And now it's already been mainstream, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, what? It's sort of for everybody. Is that the idea?
Yeah. I mean, weightlifting and bodybuilding has a really interesting history in this country. Not that long ago, as recently as the early 1970s, it was still considered fringe, and a lot of medical authorities still saw lifting as actually being detrimental to health, that it could make you, you know, limit your movement. And so thanks to people like Arnold Schwarzenegger in the 70s and the kind of hard body era of the 80s that he ushered in, lifting has become more mainstream. But today, as you said, the reasons why people are lifting have really expanded beyond appearances, which is primarily what strength training was sort of used for in the past.
Yeah, and just a quick follow-up before we expand the conversation into the more modern types of workouts, but women were not really, because you think about the Arnold Schwarzenegger weightlifting era, you didn't necessarily see women represented in that. And now you see women sort of lifting and being willing to lift heavy. How did sort of, could you just briefly summarize how women really got into workouts? Because early, I mean, last century, people were really talking about women should not be lifting, they should not be doing strenuous exercise. But now women are throwing those weights up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, historically, there really has been this fear about women and you know, strenuous exertion, fears that it could make a woman's uterus fall out or damage her in some other way. And there were, you know, throughout the 70s, 80s, there were outliers who themselves were heavy lifters and used themselves as examples of how women could benefit. But it's really in the past few years, as more and more exercise science has pointed to the benefits of lifting and heavy lifting, although it doesn't have to be, for women, and particularly women's bone density, women's strength, through menopause, that more women have been brought into the activity. I think the menopause conversation is actually really key, as you know, we were in this moment where menopause physician influencers have really risen on social media, and they are continually stressing that to offset some of the muscle loss that women experience with age, they need to be strength training.
Yeah.
Let's bring in some callers, because we're asking folks about their workout routines and how they keep at it. So on line one, we have Amethyst from Erie, New Jersey. I hope I have both of those things right. You're on Studio 2. What's your exercise routine, and how do you stick to it?
Hi, yeah. So my big thing is about cardio, because I have a history of heart disease in my family. So I knew I needed to get into cardio, but just slogging out on a elliptical was not working. So I found out I had to give myself a goal. And my goal was to get down to an 8-minute mile. And it took me months, because I think I started out at like 15 minutes. But by every day trying to track it and see how could I get down to that 8 minutes, how could I get faster, how could I get stronger, that's what really kept me going, and I got there.
Mm. First of all, can we clap it up a little bit?
8 minute mile.
15 to 8 is crazy.
That is so good.
That's awesome. Let me bring in another caller here, because we got some good ones. Joseph from Satterton, PA, is on line 3, wants to tell us about his workout tips. Hey, Joseph, you're on Studio 2.
Oh, hello. My workout fitness is basically I do strength training at least three times a week, plus aerobic stuff, and that could be walking. Don't run anymore, but cycling, because I used to do bicycle racing, basically just keep doing it. And at work, passive workout is always take the stairs, up, coming down. If you're a little overweight, maybe it's okay to ride down, because you don't want to damage your knees, hips, ankles from impact. Mm-hmm. But always take the stairs up. And one motivation is I have a scale, and it's not the weight that bothers me. Is when it does the body fat analysis and the percentage of body fat goes up. Mm-hmm. I work out, watch proper diet, and to keep body fat down, and been doing that since my college days until now. Mm.
Thanks, Joseph.
And it's a good thing. Whatever you do, keep doing it.
Keep doing it.
Keep doing it.
I love it. Well, that's good advice. Thank you, Joseph.
Joseph is on it.
Satterton. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about weightlifting, Katie. Like, I guess for me, I'm not a weightlifter. I find it a bit intimidating, to be quite honest. And maybe I'm kind of imagining what gym culture used to be like. But for me, it just felt like that's just not for people like me. So how do I get past that hurdle? What's an accessible way to get into some sort of weight resistance, weight training?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, your feelings are valid. So I hear you. And so to kind of expand on what Danielle touched upon is just that, like, we are trying to exercise for health span, right? We are living longer. So with that longevity comes the parts get old, right? The car no longer runs. You got to replace the tires. So how do you age functionally and survive that? And so there is a dirty gym culture, right? You don't want to walk into the gym with the Arnold Schwarzeneggers and the stringer tops and people dropping weights and grunting, right? And then you instinctively want to think, I need to be like that if I need to do this. So I got to go all in or nothing. And so you can dip a toe in the water. And so it's just that. And the answer I always say is anything you do is better than nothing, right? Mm-hmm. So if you weightlifted and you just did one set of a few different exercises, great. That's more than you did if you sat on the couch, right? So it doesn't need to be the high intensity power lifting, one rep max movements or explosive. It can be training for muscular endurance, lighter weights and higher repetitions and just getting that benefit that it is, right? It's the weight being lifted, the muscles pulling on the bones, making your bones stronger. Sure, it's calories burned too, but then it's just going to improve your mood and just make you feel better and more functional. So the weightlifting that you choose, whether that is doing powerlifting, Olympic weightlifting, CrossFit, or hitting the machines because that's what's convenient and your apartment has it, right, is better than nothing.
The machines do look weird to me though sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know how to use, I guess I should just Google it, but they, I'm like, am I using this thing right?
Sure. Yeah. And not
Googling it actually works.
I was just going to say, right, there's great influencers out there that will show a video of how it's worked. Yeah. And, you know, but to your credit as well, it's not a one size fits all machine either, right? A mom and their son want to go to the gym together and the son wants to learn to work out, or the daughter, and they get on the machines and it's built for adults, you know? And so those range of motions aren't going to be ideal for the kid. And so sometimes the free weights like the dumbbells or the kettlebells might be better because it allows you to move in your own range of motion. Yeah. And so, yeah, there's definitely a learning curve. And so there are machines now, everything's smart, you know, it's got a QR code scan to figure out how to use it. And so there are videos out there, which are great.
No excuses.
Yeah. And I want to bring in another caller. We have Eric from Germantown on the line. Eric, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
I just wanted to recommend dancing in the morning. I've been enjoying putting on one or two songs and dancing. It lifts your spirits, and it's nice for getting loose. And that's my main thing. Oh, you know, I have one other suggestion too. Ping pong is just excellent. I got older during a period when I wasn't exercising my reflexes at all, like my fast reflexes. And I didn't realize I hadn't been until I started playing ping pong. And I was like, whoa, but it really wakes up your brain, too.
Yeah.
You know, my kids get a thrill from video games and stuff. There's just hadn't been anything like that for me in my life. And so the ping pong is great, actually.
Ping pong and dancing from Eric.
It's like
from
the Marty Supreme workout routine. I like that.
You could join the conversation, by the way, by calling 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. So, Katie, one of the things, I've been lifting weights for a few years. But, you know, then I fell off, and then, you know, you think you can go back to the old weight you were at, and you get humbled real quick. Just sort of how do you start the weights? And I like free weights. So how do you start the weights for folks who want to pick up the weights? Do you just start super light and work your way up? How do you sort of just get started? And when do you know it's time to elevate to the next weight level?
Yeah, that's a great question, especially given the time of year, right? We know the New Year's resolutioners, right? And so you're motivated. This is the year I start a routine, or this is the year I start weightlifting or running or whatever. And so safety first, right? So nothing's worse than if you do too much too soon and you wake up the next day and you're so sore, you're like, I don't want to ever do that again. I don't want to feel this way. And so then you don't move for 4 days, and then you've lost your mojo, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's understanding and having that humility, right? And not comparing yourself to the past, right? It's the thief of joy. And so accepting that if you feel like you got a good stimulus, you're going in, I say, I want to work 0 to 10, 10 being a max. I want to feel like this was a 5 out of 10. If you hit that 5 out of 10, you're doing great. It doesn't matter what that weight is. I don't care. You know, it's just a number. And
don't
worry
about the weight.
Exactly. And so whether I'm doing weighted push-ups and you're doing push-ups, or I'm doing push-ups on the wall and we're all feeling like it was 50% effort, we all got the same benefit.
Yeah, our first caller said that you really needed a goal, and that a goal sort of like helped her stay motivated. Is there like a goal people should set if they want to start lifting weights? That would be one that they could reach and keep the motivation going.
Yeah, absolutely. So the general guidelines, we typically follow American College of Sports Medicine. And so they recommend a minimum 2 days per week of strength training exercises, whether that is dumbbells, kettlebells, like you had said, ideally, you know, 4 to 8 different movements. So whether that's 4 different lower body movements and 4 different upper bodies or some combination. So trying to get a maximum of upper and lower body.
So 2 days a week, 4 movements. Okay.
That seems doable.
That's doable.
Mary says, I broke my arm 4 months before I was a bridesmaid with a sleeveless dress.
Oh, no.
So once my cast was off, I joined the Y so my arms would match. The left had atrophied a bit from not being used. What I learned about myself is that I like working out. It's a stress release. And looking back, I've always done something physical to clear my mind going back to childhood. Interesting perspective from Mary.
That was a good one.
Okay, I want to bring you back in the conversation, Danielle Friedman, because, you know, we're talking about this rise of interest in weight training. Does that mean there's been like a concomitant decrease in interest in aerobic exercise or yoga? I mean, obviously yoga is still very big, but like other types of exercises that are not as explicitly weight training based, are they out of vogue?
I would say, I mean, yes and no. Several big gym franchises have reported replacing some of their cardio equipment with weight training equipment to meet, you know, member demand. So we're seeing a little bit of that. And I think just generally a recognition that for a workout to count, you know, it doesn't have to, you don't have to be dripping in sweat and pushing yourself to your limit every time with a really exhausting cardio routine. But I have also seen, I think there has really been an embrace. This started during the pandemic, but of walking as a form of cardio and of gentler forms of aerobic activity in general. But it's been really interesting to see walking go from something that was sort of poo-pooed as like not really exercise to it's become sort of formalized in the last few years and really embraced, and it's been met with exercise science that shows that we really can benefit from walking, even if it doesn't feel quite as intense as other forms of cardio.
Yeah, we had a caller who talked about just taking the stairs, right? And it reminded me of this acronym we came across on our research, VILPA, Vigorous Intermittent Lifestyle Physical Activity. I think we could do a better acronym-wise for that one. But anyways.
VILPA.
Sure, VILPA. And there's also this trend called Japanese walking. It seems like sort of all together combined, there is this movement toward trying to like do physical things throughout the day that are not like set aside as a workout, but that are going to help me overall be healthier. I'm curious, Katie, if you've seen that on the ground level, at the grassroots level, and what you think of that as a strategy.
Yeah, so you definitely see this attempt to optimize your life, right?
Right.
You know, how often, you know, let me get an AI routine for this or train my house to do this so that it turns on the coffee maker at 6 o'clock, right? We're all trying to, you know, it's a rat race. And so
we're hacking our lives.
Yeah, and I can totally empathize with the desire to get the most with the least. And so I think that's kind of where these things like Japanese walking comes from, or VILPA, or just trying to have these like small bouts of high intensity stuff. And you see that, right? People are, they want to go to a 20-minute workout class or a 30-minute and cram the most in and drip sweat.
I feel like there's a but here.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Exactly. There's a but. Exactly.
It's a but that you would do this at the expense of setting aside time for exercise, and that there might be some trade-off there.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of sustainability too, and appropriateness for your health, right? So doing vigorous intensity exercise that does come at a risk, and so we don't recommend that you just willy-nilly go do vigorous intensity as somebody who's maybe 50 plus with a known cardiovascular condition or a metabolic disease. You should seek physician clearance, and so you don't want people willy-nilly engaging in this vigorous activity that can put them at risk for, you know, a thrombolytic event or some type of cardiovascular event.
That's a
good point. And so, you know, making sure that you are safe and cleared to do that, but also again, just the sustainability, right? So the best exercise program is the one that you stick to, and you typically stick to one that fits your schedule and you enjoy it. And so I think, you know, back to Cherry's point, is trying to rationalize your own goals and have a goal, and that's good, but finding a way that it fits in your life. You're a parent, the daycare pickup was late, and so now you had an hour to work out and now you only have 30 minutes. Do you just put your feet up and say, well, my workout's ruined, it's not going to be the same? So
30 is better than nothing,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And so it's just trying to find something. And so maybe with that 30, you work out at a higher intensity to get a little bit more benefit than you would have with the hour. Or maybe you just work out for 30 minutes and that's okay. I think we need to promote just any activity as opposed to trying to biohack that activity, and just start supporting people and saying, hey, good job at being physically active today. That was great.
Yeah, Tom says, no matter what I'm doing, I always eventually go back to things that look like powerlifting. There's just something super satisfying about caveman brain number go up, like he likes that. Annette says,
lift 145, yeah. Lift 150. Yeah,
I love that.
I get it.
Native Man says, cycling because it's a compound movement workout and it's never boring. That's what Native Man likes. Sure. Louise from Chester County is on the line. Want to bring her in? She's a caller. Louise, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Oh, darn.
Louise is gone. I wanted to sort of talk about timing. And I wonder, Danielle.
Call back, Louise, by the way.
By the way, because we went to you, Louise. We wanted to hear what you had to say. But would love to get your thoughts about timing. Because there was a time in my life where early mornings was like ideal. And then there was a lot of talk about how nighttime workouts, especially strenuous workouts, were not good. I have problems sleeping. Just your thoughts on that. And I guess I think, Katie, you probably can answer that. And then I want to hear Danielle's thoughts on the trends about timing and what time of day is supposed to be optimal. Your thoughts, Katie?
Yeah, again, that just goes kind of back to that return on investment, right? And the example I would give maybe is when people sit there and go, oh, do I switch white rice for brown rice or vice versa? And it's, well, I think we should maybe cut out the Ben and Jerry's, or, you know, that's what's going to give you the most return on your diet and healthy choices. And so it kind of the same thing with the timing. You know, if you're somebody where the morning works, it works great. And if you can only exercise at night after you put the kids to sleep, that may come at a sacrifice. It may be taking longer to fall asleep, or you don't get as great of sleep quality. And so there's always going to be a trade-off. Everything we do has a consequence. It may be a positive consequence, like you feel good because you exercised, or a negative consequence, like you're taking longer to fall asleep. And so, again, I think it's just a matter of what works best for you and your schedule.
Yeah. And Danielle, has there been any trends regarding timing? Have influencers been talking about this topic and trying to optimize this as well?
Good question. I can't say that I've seen specific trends around timing, but I think that I would just add that for so many people, and, you know, it's a process of trial and error. And to that point, if you hear an influencer talking about the benefits of one time of day versus another, that's not necessarily going to apply to your life.
Sure. Yeah.
So, you know, if you're struggling to find the best time, like try waking up 30 minutes earlier, you know, for a week, or try doing it before bed and seeing what works. The research basically shows that there isn't one best time of day to exercise. It's what works for you. Mm.
Guys, great news. Louise is back.
Louise
from Chester County. Hey, Louise, you're on Studio 2. Thanks for calling back. What's your question or comment?
Thank you. Well, I just wanted to make a comment and encourage my fellow cancer survivors. I'm a 10-year cancer survivor.
Congratulations.
And yeah, thank you. About a year ago, for the first time in my life, I started strength training over at Kinetics Training in Eagle View, where I live. And what I found is that you start where you start. I started it, you know, deadlifting 25 pounds, and now I'm up to 105 pounds. And I know it's an increase above that over time, very slowly. But I like going to, I recommend going to a program where you are with other people, so you have a sense of community, yet they work individually with you where you are. We have people, men and women both, and people are, you know, lifting as little as 25 pounds and as much as 400 pounds,
That's
you know.
Great. That's great.
But the sense of community is amazing. And I also recommend the high-intensity program as well. I've just started that. And again, I get to modify it for what I can do. But it lets me at least do something high-intensity. And I recently had a bone scan that showed improvement in my bone density.
I love it.
You
Man,
go,
I love it.
Louise is doing all the things. Thank
you,
Louise.
From Chester County. Glad we got that call in. Let's bring in another caller. This is Molly from Cherry Hill on line 5. Hey, Molly, you're on Studio 2. Be curious for your exercise insight.
So thanks for taking my call. I'm a very senior citizen. I've been physically active my whole life. I rode horses, skied, did workout classes, free weights, CrossFit, the whole gam, right?
Yep.
The last couple of years, I've been doing free weights and cardios, but I've been getting sore in my shoulders, my back, et cetera. I thought, well, it's age. 2 months ago, I started PVOLV. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's Jennifer Aniston's go-to thing, but that's not why I did it. The full disclosure, I don't have anything to do with this company in any way, shape, or form. I'm just a paying member, right? What makes it different than any other program is that the whole program is based on functional training. It builds strength, balance, mobility that you didn't know you have, and it helps you in everyday life and sport. It's an online subscription. You have hundreds of classes you can attend at your, you know, at your convenience. And for me, in less than 1 month, I don't have any issues, back, shoulder, anything. I feel so great, and I find myself being able to do things that I was able to do years ago. I mean, everyone is different, obviously, but, you know, there's different types of workouts for all kinds of people, and you could do it without any equipment, but the majority of it does require some equipment, and there's also like a 2-week free trial.
All right. So. Thank you, Molly. Thanks for the recommendation. That actually triggered a thought for me, which is how technology changes workout culture. Mm-hmm. And look, the VCR totally changed workout culture, right? Jane Fonda, et cetera. And now we've got our phones, and there's so much stuff that you can find online. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Some of it's good, I'm sure. Some of it's bad. But I'm just curious how, like, smartphone technology has changed workout culture. I know that's a big topic, but Danielle, do you have thoughts on that?
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's a great question, and it is a big topic. I mean, I think the portability, first of all, even with VCRs, it was very freeing to get to work out in the privacy of your own home, but you had to be in front of a TV. Mm-hmm. You can do it anywhere, but I also think tracking, you know, smartphones and devices now offer, of course, all sorts of tracking technology, which can be, you know, it can be great if you are trying to improve a certain metric or you just like keeping tabs on your.
It can gamify it for some people. Some people like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But then, you know, it also it can introduce a level of competition or of comparing yourself to others. You hear this a lot in the running community, that isn't always beneficial to your health and can kind of take away from some of the positive mental health benefits. So, you know, I think tracking or comparing in that way should be approached with some caution.
Yeah. A big follow-up to what Avi was talking about with the phones. I wonder about this whole obsession with gadgets that we've had, because reading some of your reporting, you talked about the Thighmaster. Then I remember when steppers went in, because I got a stepper for Christmas 1 year and I was doing the steps.
Yeah.
And then, you know, during the pandemic, people really got into Pelotons, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just wonder if there's like gadgets right now, Danielle, that have become really popular that everybody's sort of flocking to and spending their money on right now.
Yeah, well, what should I blow my money on?
I know. Because they were like,
no, some of it's good though. Some of it's good. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a range. Listen, you mentioned vibration plates.
Oh yeah, we did.
I don't even know. The concept that you can attach yourself to some kind of vibrating device and get toned or lose weight is literally 100 years old. You know, people were doing this in the 1920s. In the
50s, and describe this thing. Exactly. It's like a disc and people like...
You stand on it and the idea is that it activates your muscles, you know, makes them contract in a way that will you know, benefit your health. But the evidence is extremely slim there. So
it's
thin. but, you know, interestingly, I think this one might be a little bit more controversial, but there has been a huge surge in popularity of weighted vests, especially for women over the past few years. And while, you know, they're not inherently dangerous for most people, if you don't, you know, so long as you don't have certain skeletal conditions, they tend to be overhyped, especially the way that they're presented in terms of, you know, just put one on and it will sort of, it will
make you replace faster.
Strength training or if it makes you feel good and, you know, you've noticed changes in your energy or strength after, great. But we throughout time have continually looked for, you know, ways to just sort of get the same benefits from exercise by doing less.
Yeah, shortcuts.
And shortcuts. Unfortunately, you do have to.
Usually shortcuts are dead ends. I have to be the bearer of bad news on that one. But not, you know, maybe not always. Interesting comment from Laurel. who says, I appreciate this conversation, but one thing that's always missing from discussions like these is the connection between transportation and exercise. That is, make your transportation and exercise the same thing. I bike, walk, or use public transit to go almost everywhere, and I get cardio every single day without having to plan for it or think about it at all. The complete segregation of exercise and transportation is a sad indicator of the chokehold the automobile has over most Americans' whole lives. Interesting insight there from Laurel. I am curious for you, Katie, like how you advise people to navigate the trends that pop up. Because at the end of the day, yes, the science changes, but still, like the core recommendations, like do some weight training, do some aerobic exercise, that's not shifting all that much. And yet people do have these kind of crazy swings. So how do you advise people to, you know, pick the trends that might work for them and get them motivated without maybe going too hard into the trends?
Absolutely. We are definitely victims of the fire hose of information that is technology and social media,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you open it and here's a new trend or a device that you should purchase, and we make it easy for you, or your friend has it and it sounds cool. And again, it's just a matter of your return on your investment. I never want people to feel like their money's been wasted, and the simplest things work, you know. So if it truly was extraordinary and life-changing, I think everybody would have it. They'd be in every gym facility everywhere. Everybody would be prescribing it. And so the simple things are not sexy, but you got to do them. And so, like you said, you know, if I could put a 30-minute walk a day, every day, 5 days a week into a pill, I'd be a trillionaire just from the benefits of that medication alone. And so,
yeah.
But again, it's a privilege. And back to the caller who had mentioned that, you know, cycling is a privilege, to have a bike lane is a privilege, yeah. And to feel safe doing that. We have snow and ice right now. That's
it's hard to bike.
People aren't going to run right now. It's you know, is it illuminated at night to feel safe to run in the winter months? Probably not. And so just trying to find whatever works for your schedule and your life, and finding ways, and that may be a YouTube class or something, or the Peloton at home, and that's where you find that technology that works,
yes.
And it works for your budget. Maybe it's a knockoff brand spin bike that you got, and you're taking an Apple Fitness class on your phone or something. And so there's ways to kind of integrate it and do it on the cheaper, and find ways where you can still find that community or go to a workout class and find that social benefit, that mental health benefit on top of all those great physical benefits.
Yeah. And so I wonder, because we have a couple more minutes before we have to wrap up, I just wonder, Danielle, where do you see fitness headed? We've gotten to this place where we've, you know, there was all this, you know, we're in the strength era now. Do you see this as something that will continue? Will this become like a permanent fixture, do you think, given this connection to longevity?
I think it will. And I mean, and, you know, strength training, I also just want to point out, doesn't just have to be lifting heavy objects, lifting weights.
Yeah.
You can also do, you know, body weight exercise, resistance exercises, lifting objects around your house. I do think it's here to stay, though, largely just, you know, because of the body of research that
the
we
evidence,
now have.
Yeah.
The evidence showing that it's beneficial, not just for preventing frailty, but, you know, disease prevention, so many things that affect quality of life and health span, as we talked about before. And I just, you know, there has been a shift over the past several years to toward activity for mental health. And I think all of these themes that we've talked about play into that. So, I see us also continuing to go in that direction and continuing to recognize that movement, when you meet yourself where you are, you don't see movement as punitive, and, you know, you figure out what actually feels good. It can be a really powerful tool for our mental well-being as well.
Dandelion Greens on YouTube says, I keep handheld dumbbells at home and use them whenever I'm watching a program. No way I could ever go to a gym, too intimidating. That's an interesting perspective. Annette shouted out swimming. John from Easton wanted to advocate for yoga. Mary from Burlington couldn't get to your call, but wanted to shout out walking. Also, thanks to Chris from Chester, who was holding on the line as well. And of course, thank you so much to our guests. Danielle Friedman, contributor to the New York Times Well Desk and author of Let's Get Physical, How Women Discovered Exercise and Reshaped the World. Appreciate your time today on the program, Danielle.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you, Katie Hunzinger, exercise scientist at Thomas Jefferson University. Katie, always a pleasure to see you here on Studio 2.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yes. And now it is time to reveal our Studio 2 DJ of the Day song selection. Hit it, Al. And that's Pump It Up by Elvis Costello from 1978.
This song is frequently played at sporting events, and Costello once said, quote, "I'm not a big ice hockey fan myself, but would you tell them to stop playing it while they have those big sticks in their hands?"
I wouldn't say that. I could tell you that.
Thank you to Joseph O. from Souderton for choosing that song and being our DJ of the day.
That was a good pick. I like that one. Yeah. Yes. And thank you, of course, to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Aunt Hazel May Bryan. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer, Al Banks, Adam Staniszewski, and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Joan Isabella is our audio general manager. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
Elvis Costello also once said, "Radio is a sound salvation." He's a speaker of truths, folks. I'm Avi Wolf.
All right.
We'll talk to you next week.